Good morning. You are listening to Upfront. I am Kat Brooks. I am joined this morning by Bay Area activists, authors, and poets Leroy Moore and Lisa Tiny Gray Garcia of Poor Magazine to talk about their new book, Poverty Scholarship, Poor People Led Theory, Art, Words, and Tears Across Mama Earth. Leroy Moore is a poet, a journalist, poverty disability scholar, founder of Crip Hop Nation, and formerly houses co-founder of Homefulness. He is the author of Crip Hop Nation, the graphic novel, and contributing author to Poverty Scholarship, along with so much more. Good morning, Leroy.
Good morning. What's up?
Also joined in studio by Lisa Tiny Gray Garcia, a formerly unhoused, incarcerated poverty scholar, journalist, poet, teacher, and single mother, daughter of a houseless disabled mama D, and a co-founder of Poor Magazine, Prensa Pobre, Poor News Network, along with so much more. Good morning, Tiny.
Morning. What's up?
All right. So the first, what do you mean by poverty scholarship?
Well, I think that, first of all, I always have to start by honoring the first peoples of this land, always, whenever I speak here. And we are in the occupied village of Huichin. I say that because one of the roots of poverty scholarship is our indigenous and our ancestors, our scholars that we never consider had everything before this project called colonization in Americland, right? Took everything away from land and people that were abundant. And that to say, as well, that I honor my mama, D, for without whom there be no me, OG poverty scholar. So to answer you, though, straight up, is people who've lived through struggle, incarceration, these false borders, this unhoused nation, this notion that if you don't have enough money for someone's arbitrary notion of rent, that you're on the street and that you're automatically criminalized for things that if you did inside would be protected because people who are inside have the privilege of enclosure rather than the exposure, right? I always tell people to think about, you know, the notion of what if someone took the roof off of your house? Would they call you dirty? So going back to that, what is folks who've struggled and survived through these positions of poverty that can be many things. You know, it ain't about how much money in your paycheck only, right? It can be ongoing police harassment that happens to poor people, black and brown people, every day. And as we often say, America KKK, it can be the ways that people are criminalized, specifically mamas on these different forms of, you know, scarcity model support, like health fare and MediHeal, and these are all, you know, my remix of the colonizer's language. But these ways in which, you know, if you lie on your 52-page proof of income form when you're trying to get the little crumb, you know, they accuse you of fraud, right? But these positions are actually forms of scholarship. And so we're taking back the notion of what scholarship really means. It doesn't just mean because you went to an institution, got yourself in a whole lot of debt, took part in what I call the away nation, you know, leaving your families of origin, going 5,000 miles away to learn some colonizer's history of your own peoples, but the stuff that you've lived through. And that itself is a valid form of information and of knowledge. You know, you survive on hardly any money that poor mamas get. That's scholarship. Right. I don't have to tell any of the mamas listening, including yourself, that, you know, the knowledge that we have to use to survive and thrive through so many of these system abuses, as poor people, as indigenous peoples, as folks going through these positions, that's a very powerful form of knowledge.
Leroy, you have anything you want to add to that question about what poverty scholarship is or means to you?
Yeah, I want to say poverty scholarship has been here since Jesus, you know, since Jesus to hip-hop. Everything that we do came from poverty scholarship. You know, the last poets, you know, hip-hop, whatever, you know. So poverty scholarship is nothing new, you know. So we just have to go back to that and get out of these institutions and really talk about solutions that go beyond the political arena.
Because I know there's a story here, I do, because I know enough about you all. What was the process of inspiration and then creation of this book?
Well, Let's see. Again, I got to bring up my mama. The beginning was when, you know, she had survived by any means necessary and got that paper. You know, took her 20 years, but she got, you know, the master's degree, and she got this JOB in the institution doing revolutionary social work, or what we now term remixed revolutionary love work, as opposed to anti-social work, which is something we talk about in the book. But anyway, she was doing it, and she got called unsupervisable by, you know, one of the psychologists, MA Psych, you know, and what she was doing was family restoration, which is a form of revolutionary love work. She was actually trying to bring families back together after system separation, at, you know, like foster systems and the criminal injustice system. And she was fired for that. Pretty much it was this ongoing struggle, because we ended up sleeping in doorways, on the street, bus benches, you know, hoopties when we had them, shelter beds when we could get in them, and most of the time outside. At that point, when I was 11, I had to start caring for Mama. She was disabled. She couldn't go on it. She used to say, it's one more little murder of the soul, which happens a lot, right? So at that point, I had to be this sort of adult. And I always joke, not really in my slam bio, that I had to drop out of institutional school and enroll full-time in the School of Hard Knocks, which I graduated with a PhD in poverty. But I don't say that because I'm glamorizing. There's nothing beautiful or fun or cute about the different positions we went through. You know, I had to teach myself how to do eviction fighting in court, literally, at 13, so we could keep apartments for as long as we could, through all kinds of backroom strategies, which I don't even talk about because they're considered poverty crimes. You know, teach myself how to do bankruptcy filings, like all of these crazy things. And at that point, one of the things that happened is, after I went into jail at 18, it sort of killed us. It killed the art that we were even doing. We were surviving, making art on the street. It killed the spirit, and I tried to end my life. And what ended up happening at that point is, my mama knew at that point that we couldn't keep on keeping on the same way. And she became a resource queen, which all of us poor mamas are. And she found the revolutionary attorney that is Ocean Newman, who bailed me out of jail after 3 months and turned my 2,700 hours of community service into a writing assignment. A few things happened at that point. Really bad things and really interesting good things. I usually call them the tres milagros. But what happened is, my mom started to sit in on classes by Erica Huggins and Angela Davis, you know, Velia Garcia, Dr. Loco, you know, some of these indigenous and black studies and Raza studies, and she started to understand the culture and the deep structures that have been taken from her as an orphan, as a poor woman, as a person who lived in L.A. We were hella, like, empty. We were just like, you know, in like survival by any means, right? And that consciousness enabled me and Ma to think about what became Poor Magazine. It also began the process to create what we called a different canon, which is poverty scholarship. We started to hook up with other poor folks to create what became Poor Magazine, helping each other write our own stories, refusing to continue to have media and art and education done about us without us. And at that juncture, the notion of poverty scholarship became codified, and we started to call ourselves poverty scholars. And it literally, of course, was a 22-year process before we got to this beautiful thing.
Book. Tiny, since you've been on, I think we've heard AmeriClan, MetaHell, AmeriKKK, Police. I don't think we've gotten to Devil Lopers yet, but
right,
that's
right.
Another one that you use often. Why the shifting of the language? Why?
The root of the colonial project is to take away culture, and they do it through language. So I was just told that I was given a big compliment by Hanson. Thank you, Hanson Lee. He said, you're like a Chinese philosopher, Tiny, because ancient Chinese philosophers never called the enemy by their name, because when you did, you gave them power. And so I do feel that it's important to rename these systems so that you give people a hit on the danger that's coming toward them.
Libra, I want to turn to you, but sort of expanding on something that Tiny started to talk about a little earlier, and that was sort of the public view of the unhoused and of the poor, and then how that gets codified inside of the mainstream media's narrative about poor folks and unhoused folks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the public view really comes from, you know, media, corporate nonprofits, especially nowadays with foundations and rich tech people that give charity, you know, to poor people, you know. But I want to go back and say that, you know, Tiny's words are not only words, they are an original theory. Theory that poor people came up with. You know, a lot of press and a lot of quote-unquote scholars or mainstream activists think that poor people can't do theory. And that's wrong. And we... And this book is our theory. It's not only pushing back on what's out there, it's coming from our words, flipping the words into our, you know, lingo. So it's our theory. And it's the theory that needs to be out there. You know, because We done everything. We done the charity model. We done the nonprofit model. We done that, you know? So it's really time to really say, okay, let's really not only listen to poor people, but take on their theory, take on their education, you know? Yeah.
You are listening to Upfront. I am Kat Brooks in conversation with Bay Area activist authors and poets Leroy Moore and Lisa Tiny Gray Garcia of Poor Magazine. We're talking about their new book, Poverty Scholarship, Poor People Led Theory, Art, Words, and Tears Across Mama Earth. And Leroy just brought up something that you do attack also in the book, which is philanthropy and nonprofits. Which, I mean, I think even people, you know, even some of our comrades who work inside of nonprofits would have similar critiques. But from your mouth, what are the problems that you see with philanthropy and what some people refer to as the nonprofit industrial complex?
You have folks who've never missed a meal, as my mama would say, making decisions about billions of dollars, right? And can't have this conversation without bringing up that joke the other day with Benioff coming up with a $30 million study to study homelessness. Okay? 1 million of that could start two homefulnesses and house people. You can't do that. We in states of emergency. You can't continue to create these monolith structures that do nothing but employ people when folks are on the street and coming up with lies, right? And whole entire mythos about our lives. And yeah, we always say, and I'm glad you brought that up before with Leroy, you don't need no more about us without us. We can write our own stories, we can create our own systems, and we can create our own solutions. And so we cannot end today by not saying that one of the points of the book was to lift up homefulness.
And I want to localize what you're talking about, right? So Benioff, who actually is in partnership with Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf, but this idea even of like the millions of dollars that gets spent on not helpful, and I'm being nice, solutions, I'm using air quotes, to what they call the homeless crisis, you know, the tough sheds, which are the tool sheds that they're warehousing unhoused people in, of which I have in my backyard that I store my tools in suitcases and things that don't fit in my house, cost the city of Oakland millions and millions and millions of dollars, right? Not for the tough sheds, because the tough sheds get donated, but to your point about the jobs, right? The service providers, the security company, it's just millions of dollars instead of utilizing public land to build actual housing for our unhoused population. So I know I'm preaching to the choir, but I really needed to localize that so folks could get, you know, from Benioff, who's way up here, to this is what our city governments are doing.
Thank you.
That is, you know, incredibly problematic. because we have Leroy in the house. And so I do want to spend some time talking about your work, which really around unearthing, uplifting the conversation about the intersection of race and disability, and specifically in what ways Black disabled bodies are disappeared by the mainstream media. And I've got some follow-up questions after that.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it disappeared constantly. I mean, the only time you see disabled bodies on media is when it's Christmas time and you have the telethon, you have, you know, charity, you know, people going to shelters making dinners and stuff. But that's all you see. You know, and I want to shout out to Alice Wong. Alice Wong does really kick butt internet access program that uplifts people with disabilities and gets them on blogs and stuff. You know, so she's doing that work. You know, so we also have to concentrate on that. There's not only one type of media. You know, people think that mainstream media is the golden place to be. That's not the case no more. It's not the case no more. You know, people with disabilities are making films. I do what's called Crip Hop. We're doing our own media. So it's not, only looking at mainstream media and saying, you're wrong. It's like taking the mainstream media and saying, look what we're doing under your nose, you know.
Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to turn it, to our own folks, our comrades, our allies, folks in the movement. And in what ways are we on the left that are committed to building these just equitable societies and world missing the mark when it comes to being inclusive about folks with disabilities and particularly folks of color with disabilities?
Well, I push back because it's not inclusive. We've always been there. So it's really opened up the eyes. You know, we've always been there. So, movements like, police brutality, I've been doing that since the 80s. People with disabilities have been the highest number of police brutality victims since the 80s. So it's not about inclusive. It's about we've been here, and it's up to movements to open up their eyes and really say, okay, our movements are not complete because people with disabilities and their voices, their theories, their solutions, their art, activism is not a part of that.
And that's what I meant by inclusive. Yeah. I didn't mean that disabled folks aren't here and doing their own work.
Yeah.
And wanting to acknowledge and call out that movements across the board. So 80% of the people that police kill are folks that are living with disability. So calling out that is in front and center in a lot of our movement conversations by a lot of people. And you do a really good job of taking us, I include myself in that, to task around that. And I've grown personally as an organizer and activist because of your work and you're calling me out and calling other people out. So we're going to wrap up in a little bit, but I want you to talk a little bit more about what is the Poor News Network.
Oh, Poor News Network is amazing. It's more than just a media, section. It's really a concept of the way we live. Poor News Network has, started with, the magazines back in the 90s when I first got here, and now Poor Magazine has its own radio show. So, the progression of Poor News Network has grown for, 21 years?
Yeah. And Yeah, so, you know, shout out. I know we don't do that on other stations, but we did actually, us Ghetto Scholars got an FCC license, and we're actually doing a radio station in Deep East Oakland. Hella, you know, people can check us out, poormagazine.org/radio. But we're doing a lot of different types of media. One of the other things that we do, though, as part of the work is roofless radio, right? So we, again, are not trying to have people continue to be spoken about them or about us without us, right? So we have a project where we go into different encampments and actually folks speak for themselves and create their own media about their own solutions. Again, one of the other things that came out of that was this thing that we call WeSearch, and there's me with the word remix again, but poor people led research, right? We created an entire WeSearch project. One of the things that we did is it was called Invasion of the Tent Snatchers, and so we did this combination of the WeSearch with the media, and actually quantified how many tents were taken in the period when the new mayoral administration of San Francisco took over. We had found that over literally a 2-month period, 400 tents had been taken from 200 people. We're talking about taking tents over and over again from medically fragile already people, and therefore one of the politricksters, I mean supervisors, held a meeting to actually make the police, admit that they were doing the same cold weather procedure of taking people's tents, right? So these things do matter. Sometimes it feels like with us poor people media makers that no one's listening, but they are, and people do, and they're done. We often say that we make media for survival, because without it, we're going to continue to suffer. But the reality is it might shed a little bit of light onto the struggles that people deal with every day.
And it's also international. You know, we have people in Nigeria. We have people in Uganda, you know. So it's, you know, international. For me, I communicate with disabled people, you know, in Africa, in Brazil. You know, and they write their own stories about their corruption of their own government.
Exactly.
You know?
And there is inside of this book an interview, Leroy, that you do with a disabled person in Nigeria.
Yeah.
So that is also in this book. This is intended to be used to educate folks and have a curriculum, correct?
Yes. Yes, we have a curriculum. It's called Poverty Scholarship 101. We also have a whole series of workshops that we add or that we're doing. Shout out to the Berkeley Free Clinic, actually, because they just invited us in. And some places, you know, we've actually been on an academic tour. We went to, we've gone to Columbia and all of these places. And, you know, what we're doing, again, is not saying we're smashing academia. We're saying make space an actual place for poverty scholarship. Why? Because we believe that folks with different forms of race and class privilege can need to be taught about radical redistribution and this notion of community reparations, which means just because I've seen you doesn't mean I can practice the violent act of looking away, which so many people in this society do. Oh, I can't solve that problem of poverty or that problem of, you know, police brutality or immigration, so I just have to look away. No. Actually, there's action steps that everybody can do. We have enough as humans to take care of each other. And that's one of the things that Poverty Scholarship teaches.
And on that note, you are listening to Upfront. I have been in conversation with Bay Area activists, authors, and poets Leroy Moore and Lisa Tiny Gray Garcia of Poor Magazine to talk about this new book, Poverty Scholarship, Poor People Led, Theory, Art, Words, and Tears Across Mama Earth. Leroy Moore is a poet, journalist, poverty disability scholar, founder of Crip Hop Nation, and formerly Houseless, co-founder of Homefulness, and so much more. Thank you so much for joining us, Leroy.
Thank you.
And we've also been with Lisa Tiny Gray Garcia, a formerly unhoused, incarcerated poverty scholar, journalist, poet, teacher, and co-founder of Poor Magazine, Prensa Pobre, Poor News Network, and so much more. Thank you, Tiny.
Thank you, Kat.